Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. If you watch this show at all, you know that I love having market conversations and getting to see how our technologies that we develop, design, engineer, and implement get to touch people at the end of the line, not only in market applications, but practical end user applications. And one of those places is in autonomous technology. But today we're talking about autonomous technology in a place that maybe that you haven't heard of or thought of as much. Usually we talk about the cars, we talk about self-driving, things like that. But how does that same technology play out in agriculture? And let me tell you something, I'm by no means a genius about it. And I know what sort of what questions to ask, but I wanted to bring on someone today who can have that conversation at a higher level and really give you some much better feedback and context than I can. And that's Willie Pell, CEO of Blue River Technology, a John Deere company. Willie, thanks so much for coming on today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
You know, Willie, I'm going to ask you to set the table for us really before we get granular. I think I kind of hinted at it just a second ago. There's sort of sometimes a disassociation or a thought that, hey, autonomous technology only applies in these verticals or these very public industries and things like that. But the reality is we've had autonomy in the world of agriculture for a while, and obviously that continues to evolve. But can you just set the table for us? How has autonomous technology been used and leveraged in that world of agriculture historically?
So historically, just like any other industry, farmers are going to use the best technology to get the best result with the least amount of effort, right? I mean, that's just how business works. And, you know, if you go back to the 90s, farmers, you know, and John Deere was providing GPS or GNSS guidance for tractors, where the operator, you know, instead of steering all day, you could almost think of it as an ADAS system for tractors. And this was in the 90s. You know, you have really good GPS coverage because you have open skies, right? There's no GPS reflection. And so an operator can get in the cab of a tractor and then lock into an invisible line. And it's just invisible railroad tracks. Once it's locked on, they can let go of the wheel and start focusing on the job that's really at hand. And so that was in the 90s. But the operator still had to be there, right? And we needed to automate many of the tasks. So when a farmer's driving a tractor, we have this joke, we say, nobody tractors. Tractoring isn't a job. Planting is a job, and tilling is a job, and spraying is a job, and harvesting is a job. A tractor is a way to get something to happen, right? It's basically abstract horsepower. And so when the operator no longer has to think about where am I steering, they can start thinking about what's happening behind. Am I doing a good job? Am I not? And so if you kind of go from the 90s now, what we've done is kind of incrementally made that better and better and better and better and automated more and more and more of the functions that they are monitoring and giving them better tools to monitor these things. And then it comes to the point where you start to wonder what I'm actually doing here in the first place. And so... You know, if you think about how much time, you know, farming is this, especially in large ag, it's just these incredible bursts of activity followed by recovery, basically. So planting and harvest are the two busiest times of the year, and people may work for, you know, 18 hours a day, weeks straight, and then it stops. So anything you can do to give people time back is really valuable, right? I mean, imagine, so I'm sitting here in California right now, but imagine having to, you know, if your job was to drive to Denver from LA one day and then drive back the next day and then drive back and drive back. I mean, you're 12 hours in a car, you know, again, day in, day out. This kind of thing wears on you, and there are many other tasks that need to be done. So the way autonomous technology slots in is just it's giving people time back at a moment in their business cycle where there is no time and there is no labor. And so the other forcing function on this is labor availability, right? When it's harvest time, this is just a wild thing that my light bulb moment for autonomy in farming was we were out in the field and in southern Minnesota, and I was trying to find, we had an engineer working in a tractor and he was hungry, and I was trying to find food for him. And I went and got this, I was trying to get a hamburger. I was like getting anything for this guy. No restaurants were open. Everybody was out harvesting, right? The fields were alive with machinery moving around, and every single restaurant in town was closed because all of the people who used to make hamburgers are actually out harvesting. I had to go to a gas station and get that guy peanuts. And he's still kind of mad at me for it, but it just shows you that there are, people are more and more moving to urban areas, and these businesses are run on just borrowed labor, right? It's incredibly illiquid, and everybody needs the exact labor at the exact same time, right? So this spike in demand happens periodically throughout the year. So anything we could do to alleviate that was customers loved it. And then on top of it, I came from the self-driving industry for on-road, and the challenges and timelines and budgets that are required to make that work are just enormous on all fronts. And the technology, we believe, fits in these utilitarian applications like agriculture better. So it's just this kind of marrying of, large scale sort of sociological macroeconomic changes with this technology, and they just fit together really nicely for agriculture.
It's interesting that you're in California and I'm in Texas, really two places that are known for not only technology side of things here in Austin, obviously Silicon Valley, but also being massive agricultural producers, right? So it's sort of funny that we're having this conversation. You talked a lot about the labor side of things, but there really is an interesting conversation to be had, because I think when you think of the world of autonomy, right, and you talk about cars, you talk about things like that, it's you live in the world of a little bit more of convenience and functionality and things like that. When you start to bring in the world of agriculture, you start to have conversations about, hey, there is actually a growing need for efficiency. There's a growing need for food and delivery and all these things. And the application and use case sort of changes from, and this is an oversimplification, a nice to have to a have to have, right? And that's where the distinction comes for me. When you think about sort of these autonomous technologies, how does that help scale the output for that farmer, right? Whether it's a Texan like myself or someone in California, how does it help scale that output to actually drive some of those efficiencies?
That's an awesome question. So one of the things we found about labor was that people offset their business in all sorts of strange ways to account for the fact that they relied on this input, which was labor, which might be there or might not be. And at best, it's there at small scale. And we found people doing all sorts of interesting things to their business to offset that input. The most obvious of which is, I'm going to buy less land, right? Imagine if 5 out of 7 days you woke up and your microphone just didn't work. You would not have as many, you would not host as many podcasts. You would have to bake that error into your business and you'd do less, right? You'd produce less. And so we're looking at this. So we think that on many, many fronts, then there's also the opportunity cost of your time, right? So think about someone, we call it getting people out of $20 an hour jobs and into $100 an hour jobs. A farmer has to do so many different things, right? Not only do they have to maintain their equipment, not only do they have to know when to plant, make all the agronomic decisions, they also have to be able to sell at the right time. So they're timing the market. They are just basic operational. Where is everybody? Did everybody get paid? They're running a business. There's so many things they have to do. And giving them more time to the higher value tasks basically makes their business run better. So it's going to be hard to, and then the other one, I mean, it just keeps going, by the way, I could go on for a while about this. The other one is the timing aspect. So if you think, so planting, when you plant, there's an optimal time of the year to plant, right? And if you plant a little before that date and a little after that date, every single day is a 1% hit on your yield, right? And it's a 1% on a commodity crop. You cannot differentiate this crop. You can't make it better. It's corn, it's soybeans. It is, you can't pull that lever. Nailing that timing is extremely important, right? So if you just don't have the bandwidth to nail that timing, you're going to be losing yield on either. You're going to be planting early or planting late. And so the more we can compress the work into that little bit of time, the better the yield's going to be. So just from an operational efficiency, from a business scale, and from a yield perspective, every one of those things gets better. It's going to be hard to assess all the impacts because there's so many second and third order effects of this, but it's going to be a heck of an adventure seeing how it helps people. I'm 100% sure it's going to help people.
The intense seasonality just is a challenge in general for the industry, right? It has been for hundreds and thousands of years. And the great thing about technology is it not only, hey, can I use it to harvest? I could do all these different things, but there are use cases and applications even in what you would call dead seasons or when you're letting your land rest and things like that. What are some maybe use cases that people are surprised to learn that they can use the autonomy side of things for, even maybe when it's not harvesting season?
So right now, actually one of the surprising ones. So, we started off with a tillage product, right? And so tillage is the act of turning the soil over. Right. And, we started there because that's where they put, you know, they put their grandson, they put sometimes it's a 12-year-old in the cab, right. Doing that job, the entry level job on the farm was that it's like, when you're looking at automation opportunities, you tend to look at the easier things, right. Not the higher consequence things, not the more complicated, job steps. We found that so planting is the most important step in the year, right? Once you, if you plant those seeds incorrectly, if they're too far apart, if it's too late, if it's too early, there's so many dimensions that make for good planting. If you don't do it well, you can't fix it, right? You cannot fit. The rest of the season is going to play out. Months and months and months are going to pass, and your shot's fired. That's it. There's a couple incremental things you can do, but fundamentally, there's just not much you can do about it. So our expectation was that would be the last thing anyone would ever want to have automated. And what we found was, due to the timing pressure, it actually was many of our early customers were asking for planting next, which blew our minds. And look, this is not all customers. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. These are definitely early adopters. But they were very hungry to say, hey, look, go, I'm going to use it differently with tillage. I want to set the machine in the field and I'm going to go do something else with planting. I'm going to put it in the machine. I'm actually going to monitor it for a while outside of the machine. And then I'm going to go get more seed, get more fuel, come back. And it's sort of this back and forth mode where they're setting it off on its own for a while and will stop if there's a problem, and they're going and tending to it. So it's called tendering. And they're going to tend to the machine, and it allows them to compress that optimal planting window. So we were blown away by that. And generally, you know, in terms of like, we're not going to allow for someone to run a hayride autonomously or something like that. There's a bunch of safety systems that make sure it's approved use cases in approved environments and things like that, that prevent shenanigans. But the planting one was a big surprise for us.
Shenanigan proof, I think, is your new slogan, right? That's the way to do it. You know, it's interesting too, as we're even having this conversation in real time, it reminds me so much of the conversation we're having at large as a society right now about the role of things like AI and adoption of technologies. And a natural kind of devil's advocate question comes up in my mind, which says, hey, look, when you think farming, you think, this is an oversimplification, I'm admitting that, but you think the mom and pop shop, you think the dirty old cowboy hat, putting the boots on, going to plow in the fields at 4 a.m., right? How do you have the conversation with that person about autonomy, right? Because it's easy when you're talking about, hey, I'm an ag farmer and I sell my potatoes to McDonald's, right? That's a very easy conversation to have because you talk about ROI, you talk about investment, saving time, things like that. How does that conversation translate to what I would call that end of the line, maybe that more mom and pop style farmer?
There's a lot baked in that question. I think one of the things I learned getting into large ag and living in California was that it actually is still mostly mom and pop farmers, right? Most of the people I call it sometimes, we're a B2F business, business to family. And most of the time it is families running these operations in the US. You know, different countries, you have different market dynamics and setups. But in the US, it's still very much that mom and pop. What it is, though, is that mom and pop at ludicrous scale, right? And so the island of Manhattan is 13,000 acres, give or take, and about 13 people could farm all of the island of Manhattan, right? So the size of the machine, the speed at which they operate, you know, the efficacy of the genetics, the chemistry, all of our ag production systems have just scaled so much. And guess what? They still have dirty boots. They still have cowboy hats. They still have all these things. It's just operating at a scale that's unbelievable relative to what it would have been, you know, 100 years ago when 50% of Americans worked in agriculture, roughly. Now it's about a little over 1% do. And so it's still, you still very much have that same spirit, but what people are looking to do is scale it. I want to farm more acres, more profitably, more sustainably. That's what everybody's been trying to do forever. And they're still trying to do it. They just have better tools. So more things change, the more they stay the same. While there is romanticism around, you know, being in the tractor behind the wheel, plowing my field, it's also after 11 hours of it, you might be ready for something else. And so I think, you know, look, we give people the choice, like no one has to adopt this if they don't want to. But most people, when they're given the option, it works for them, they love it.
Well, Willie, one of the things that has been so interesting to me, especially getting to work, you know, in the world of B2B so frequently, is, you know, people are surprised when they find out that the John Deere name isn't just about good old boys and, you know, dusty boots and all that stuff. It actually, you guys have been for a long time an innovator in technology, whether that's autonomy, whether that's really bringing a lot of that smart technology out to the field. And obviously in your role at Blue River, you get to see some of those on a pretty granular basis. I know you guys just made a pretty big announcement out at CES and wanted to give you a chance to plug it. Talk to us a little bit about some of the things that are happening over there right now.
Absolutely. So agriculture, if you kind of look at the story of computer vision, machine learning, and robotics and ag from a deer perspective, you know, maybe start with the advent of deep learning. You know, computer vision that is learned from data entirely, right? And this deep learning capability emerged a number of years ago, and basically made so many products possible that were never possible, right? You could effectively make a perfect vision system with a lot of work and a lot of talent and a lot of know-how. You could effectively make a perfect vision system for a constrained environment. So this new capability emerges, and the first thing we did was say, okay, look, like let's detect crop from weeds and save farmers time, right? So, save farmers on their input costs. So you save chemicals on seed and spray. Then we can point cameras forward and make autonomous machinery. And what we found was, so we've just talked about autonomous tractors and autonomous farming. John Deere serves many different industries as well, right? We make construction equipment. We make lawn care equipment. And two of the new announcements, so we work in orchards. It's not just in large ag. So what we're doing is taking these autonomous capabilities and spreading them laterally across all of our other businesses, right? And so we've built the tech stack in such a way that it's almost like you have these core ingredients and you can kind of mix and match them and make different meals out of them, different recipes, right? And so our announcements are we've got the next version of our autonomous large tractor, and what that's going to allow us to do is to do all of these different operations, right? So a tractor does fall tillage, spring tillage, planting, and it follows a combine with a grain cart. It's really four major jobs that it does. The first version we had could do this very narrow task and called the chisel plow. It was a subset of a subset of a subset of a market. And we hit that because we wanted to basically not have our autonomy be vaporware. Most autonomy never actually sees the light of day. The operator's never really removed from the cab. No one ever exchanged money. It really never becomes a business. We were like, if we can't nail this one simple use case, we shouldn't go any further. We did that, and now we're expanding it. So the new Gen 2 autonomy system is an aftermarket kit. You can like put it on top of a tractor that exists back to a certain number of years. You can buy it, you know, out of the factory, and it's going to be able to eventually do all of these jobs. So that's one announcement. Another one is autonomous orchard spraying. So in an orchard, you have all the same dynamics of labor availability and quality for orchard growers in California and elsewhere. But one of the challenges is you're under trees, right? So you're GPS denied. So all of our guidance stack is not going to work in that environment. So that's a product that's basically pushing our technical limit. It's creating new technical capabilities in GPS denied environments to provide autonomy for orchards. If you look across more of our portfolio of equipment, construction. And part of construction is earth moving, right? A huge amount of the cost of any road that is built, that a building that's built, is just moving earth around, right? Leveling it, so on and so forth. And the workhorse of that is called it's what's called an articulated dump truck. So it's a giant truck, weighs, if I had to guess, it's probably like 80,000 pounds, 100,000 pound truck. And it takes an excavator, puts a bunch of dirt in it. It takes dirt from point A to point B. We're announcing an autonomous dump truck for usage in quarries. Again, these quarry operators have exactly the same labor challenges as farmers, right? All of this, when you're talking about autonomy, you're talking about labor availability and quality, right? And business optimization, and safety from the standpoint of construction. Safety is something that is a lot of people have accidents in that environment, and they definitely they will pay for safer systems. So autonomous articulated dump truck, and then finally, maybe closer to home for everybody else, is an autonomous electric mower. So this one's really fun. So we kind of have all sizes. This is the cutest, most approachable one. It's a small electrical little zippy mower that for usage in commercial mowing. So if you think about all the grass in parks and offices everywhere, kind of 35 weeks a year, they are mowing lawns once a week in general. You've got the landscapers, their business, lawn mowing is kind of, that's like the table stakes. Their real value adds are in the, what plants, what flowers are there, hedge trimming, hedge shaping, tree care, all the kind of more advanced stuff. You kind of get in with the lawn care, and then the high value work is elsewhere. So again, they have all the same labor availability and quality challenges. And so if they can automate this and go on and do the higher value tasks, they're thrilled. So we're basically making an autonomy factory, right? And we've built the tech stack in such a way that fairly small teams can pretty quickly move into these new verticals. And we're super excited about it.
It's not even more nice to have, right? Because we've moved into have to have territory, these second, third, fourth generations of these technologies that you're rolling out allow people to incorporate better data gathering and management and make better decisions in real time. A very simplified example might be, you talk about use cases at home. I've got a Roomba Shark, whatever vacuum at home. Imagine now, based off of the data that gathers in real time, oh, hey, it may know that it needs to flip to a mop now, or it may know, oh, hey, the air quality is terrible here, so let me deploy the air purifier function, right? Those are the conversations that we're having really at scale when we start talking about a lot of these autonomous technologies, is we get into really granular and informed decision-making, even beyond just the, look, let me point and click and tell you where my tractor needs to go, right?
100%, 100%. One of the more fun parts of the job is the different products that emerge once you have cameras and compute on board a machine, right? You kind of come for the autonomy and stay for the better decision-making, stay for the better operations. And, that is for sure true. And so one of the areas we're looking at pretty closely is using these cameras to automatically monitor job quality in a way that no one ever could on a farm. Right. You've already got cameras looking 360 degrees around the tractor. Now you could perpetually watch, in a very, very vigilant way, watch the job being done. And if, sometimes things happen on farms, sometimes you're going to, a wind blows and you're going to drag a lawn chair with your planter or your tillage implement, and you're going to want to stop when that happens. Right. And so this kind of job quality monitoring is one of these kind of emergent products that comes from it. And, to your other point of just being able to manage it better, the Op Center is our view into is kind of the operating system of the farm. More and more and more people are running their farm from their phone and giving them insight into, okay, when is this going to run out of fuel? How much seed do I have left? Is it going the right speed? I can open up the camera and look at what's happening, and you can get kind of the best person on the farm making that decision, not outsourcing it to somebody else. And so what you get is people, like the best people can kind of be everywhere at once. And anyway, it's very exciting. I imagine lots of new emergent products are going to come from having this hardware on the machine.
You know, the part of JD that really gets to innovate a lot of these technologies and build these and innovate. Willie, you know, it was so good to have you on the show today. We got to find a way to have you back on, because really this is a conversation that's important, not only from a, hey, it's cool to have this technology and you love to see how technology is being deployed, but this in a lot of ways is technology for good, right? We're feeding people, we're serving our communities, we're building global economies in many cases. And it's so cool to be able to have these granular conversations and talk about how, hey, we're using these technologies and innovations, not only as a cool, you know, thing to put in a car, right? We're talking about these conversations being deployed at scale to really serve globally, right? So that's why I love the conversation that we have. And I tell you, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your insight with us.
Always. And thanks for, you know, thanks for being so curious and giving people a view into this world they may not see every day. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Willie. I'll tell you what, thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe. Check us out next time on the show.